He's amused Cam Newton.
Just ask that question one more time.
He's been insulted by Charles Barkley.
When some idiot in the press asked him, if you know what you know now, would you have scheduled this game?
He's interviewed Matthew McConaughey.
I do say go Tarion.
And he's taken on Big Blue Nation.
He's just completely taking the wind out of my sails.
It's time for The Drive with Josh Graham.
We've made it to a Friday drive. You are listening to WSJS, News Talk Sports for The Triad, where about an hour ago, TCU and Oral Roberts opened up the College World Series. At this time tomorrow, top-ranked Wake Forest will be facing Stanford in Omaha. And maybe fans haven't expressed this because of the plus 59 run differential and the unblemished record we've seen from the Deacs the last couple of weekends. Or maybe they do feel this way, but it's just an unpopular opinion to have. They're not saying it. You don't want to say something that might upset some people. But there's a real reason to be concerned for the Demon Deacons tomorrow. There is plenty of danger in their opener, and it shouldn't be surprising to you if they should lose. And here's why. The ballpark dimensions can be a real equalizer out at Charles Schwab Stadium, or whatever they call it. They used to call it TD Ameritrade Park. Ever since they replaced Rosenblatt, they've had this park with deep fences, and it's made a difference many different times at this stage in the game. Just ask Trey Turner and NC State from about a decade ago. Wake Forest, they have the number one pitching staff in America. The best ERA by nearly a run. Nobody has better arms than Wake Forest does. That is the greatest disparity between Wake and Stanford. In fact, Wake's ERA is literally half of what Stanford's is. Nationally, Wake's number one in ERA by more than a run or close to a full run to the second place team. And Stanford ranks 128th nationally, the worst out of the eight teams that have advanced to Omaha. That seems like a pretty great advantage for Wake Forest. But the fences could curtail Wake's bats a bit. If they get a hold on some balls from Cardinal pitching and they don't quite go out, you can see where I'm headed here. It could really start to give Stanford an advantage in bridging that gap that exists between the Deacs pitching and Stanford's pitching. Here was Tom Walter pretty much saying, yeah, we're going to have to adjust our game plan because of how long these fences are.
I thought it carried a little better than I expected it to today, but we still got to, in general, live lower than we've been living. You know, we certainly can't expect some of the home runs we've hit at our ballpark or other ballparks in the ACC. If you look across our league, there's probably only one or two pitchers' parks, like in the whole league. They're mostly hitters' parks in our league. So it's not just our ballpark that plays a little smaller in our league. So we definitely have to lower our ball flight in general and change our pitch plan a little bit too.
The stage is also concerning. Everyone has talked about getting to Omaha. That's the way that people talk about college baseball. If you haven't won a national title, if you haven't been to Omaha, same for college basketball. It's like, can you get to your first ever Final Four? Can you get to your first ever College World Series, or the first in Wake's case since 1955? And then once you get there, it feels like you've already accomplished your goal, doesn't it? Hey, everyone's talking about getting to Omaha or getting to the Final Four. And then once you get there, what's stopping you from being truly fat and happy? Truly content? Hey, we've accomplished something and the rest is icing on the cake. They'll tell us now, no, we're aspiring for something more. But that's not the way that most fans are reacting. They're taking a trip to Omaha, and they would be content even if it's two and out for the Deacs, saying, this was a historic run. We're just so glad that we're there and had a magical season. And how does that not rub off on players? Juxtapose that with Stanford, who is entering their third consecutive College World Series. There's the pressure piece of being on this stage, and then the contentness piece that you can be concerned about, none of that concerns Stanford because those players know the stage. Those players aren't expected to do anything once they're in Omaha. You're playing the number one team. No one's giving them a shot. So they don't have the pressure. They know what the stage is because they've been there. It's a bit concerning. And I saw Rhett Lauder pitch last week against Alabama. That was a tight game. Alabama hit the ball out a few times on Rhett Lauder. He was not the most sharp the last time we saw him. And Stanford's bats are better than Alabama's bats. We got to give Stanford some credit here. This, on paper, is the best team Wake Forest has played this year. They played a home-and-home with Coastal. Coastal was 10th in the national rankings at the end of the year. Stanford, 8th. They were the last national seed. So this is the most talented team Wake Forest has played all year. They're in a ballpark that's different than any park they've ever played in before. It's their first time to Omaha while Stanford's been here before. And their greatest advantage, pitching, might be neutralized or at least slightly equalized by the fact you have those very deep fences out in Omaha. It's concerning to me. My gut tells me Stanford is going to upset Wake Forest tomorrow. That's what my gut tells me. I hope I'm dead wrong. I really do. Partly because I hope I have a radio show on Monday. We will have all of Wake Forest games from Omaha on WSJS. Tomorrow at 2 o'clock, 1:40 start time for our pregame. If they win, they will play Monday night. If they lose, they will be playing right now at about this time on Monday afternoon. Wake's in trouble in the World Series tomorrow. They are. It should be a great game, a great low-scoring game. On Twitter at WSJS Radio, if you want in on today's show, we're on Twitter there and streaming there in addition to YouTube and on Twitch. 336-777-1600 is the phone number. Will Dalton is the executive producer of this show. WD, as a Hornets fan, are you sad to see Michael Jordan go? Are you sad to see him selling his majority stake in the team?
Not in the slightest.
Not in the slightest.
I'm actually really perky.
You're not going to miss seeing him wear his, leather jacket sitting there courtside. It is cool when MJ's at the game.
I mean, that's great. He can still come. He hasn't been a very good owner in 13 years.
No.
He hasn't been.
Because it's MJ, and it is the majority stake sale of an NBA franchise, this is news. It's news, and it's been talked about quite a bit today, one of the biggest headlines that's out there. However, this sale isn't going to change much of anything for the Hornets moving forward. For starters, to your point, MJ isn't really going anywhere. He's not going to be the majority stake owner anymore. He's not going to be the loudest voice in the room, but he's still going to be a minority stake owner. He's still going to be sticking around the organization. He'll still have influence with the two majority owners. Why? Because those owners were minority stake owners before. They've been business partners for years. They are good friends. They're probably going to make many decisions together. And focusing on these majority stake owners, neither are really major players. Like, neither of these guys are billionaires. I think one of the two is valued at $400,000, maybe $500,000. Was greatly involved with that GameStop short from a few years ago that created some headlines. Business, Wall Street types, okay. But neither are, these massive tycoons, these massive guys that are going to, be aggressive and take the team to new heights. Oh, but at least they got Eric Church and J. Cole involved. All those part-time owners or those part owners like J. Cole and Eric Church and these two majority stake owners now, and I'll even throw MJ in that, all of them combined make up a fraction of David Tepper's net worth. Mr. Concerts, David Tepper, who's worth 13 bills.
With concerts.
That guy. He's the type of owner that can change things. Well, we're going to spend more than everybody else. We don't need to have consultants and extra coaches, support staff like Jim Caldwell or whatever, but we will spend in order to give our team every advantage. That's not what this is going to be with these two majority stake owners now. They don't have it where they're going to be spending in the luxury tax every year which Michael Jordan never did, that's not going to change all that much. So the best you can say about what happened today is that it can't really get much worse. That's the best. I don't know if it's good news. I don't know if it's good. It's just not bad news. It could be good news, but right now it's blah. We don't know yet. We don't know. Michael, he was that bad of an owner. It probably is going to be better than it was because it's hard to imagine it's going to be worse. In that sense, it's good news, but it's not earth-shaking. It's not groundbreaking. It's not going to change all that much for the Hornets, if we're being honest. The College World Series underway in Omaha, and obviously, our next guest is not on the call for TCU Oral Roberts, but in about an hour and a half, we will see Mike Monaco's face on ESPN calling Virginia and Florida tonight out in Omaha. Mike Monaco joins us now, though. And Mike, you get to call some Red Sox for Nesson, ACC basketball and football. You know, we've heard you on the call for the past few years for ESPN, the Carolina Hurricanes and the playoffs. You've been a pretty versatile guy over there. But what does this assignment, working the College World Series for ESPN, what does it mean to you and what makes it different?
Josh, great to be with you as always, man. I feel incredibly fortunate to be a part of this event. From a teammate's perspective that we have at ESPN, it's a really special event to a lot of people here at ESPN. And that goes for production folks behind the scenes whose names and voices you don't hear, who pour a ton into this and who camp out in Omaha for 2 weeks. One of my favorite parts in the 2 years that I've experienced this out here is checking in at the hotel here and they say, Mr. Monaco, I've got you here for 13 nights. Is that right? You say, yep. So, you know, 2 weeks where, you know, it's like summer camp being with incredible teammates. And then certainly on the analyst side as well, I have the utmost respect for the guys I'm working with tonight, Kyle Peterson and Chris Burke, who do the championship series as well, and then get to work with Ben McDonald as well. And Eduardo Perez is here and our sideline reporters, and obviously Carl Ravitch, who's a legend. So it means a lot. Last year was my first year experiencing it. And what a special event it is. And so cool to see, just as a sports fan, not even as a college baseball fan, to see what this city turns into and what that stadium looks like in terms of fan base. So I expect it to be fantastic tonight. And if we can peek ahead to Saturday when Wake's playing, and certainly the night game, Tennessee LSU, I think it's going to be even crazier for a Saturday night out here.
Yeah. And a reminder to the audience, we're going to be carrying all of Wake's games on WSJS starting tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Pre-game will start at around 1:40. Their opponent is Stanford, who's super regional that you had this past weekend. It would appear there's a big disparity between Wake and the Cardinal in their pitching. In fact, Wake Forest's ERA is half of what Stanford's is. However, do you think the length of the ballpark itself, the length of those fences out in Omaha, could serve as an equalizer a bit and neutralize some of that pitching advantage for Wake Forest?
You know, that's real interesting, Josh. I don't know. And I'm really excited to see what Wake looks like out here. If there is any difference from how they've been this season, and maybe in a scary way, like, again, I know the pitching staff is the best in the country in all the metrics and really by the eye test as well. But if this ballpark's playing big, like, maybe Wake's even tougher as a pitching staff because of, we all know what the couch plays like. And that's been the story through the years. And again, makes it all the more impressive what Wake's pitching staff did this season. So I'll be curious to see what it looks like. And look, Stanford, I mean, they have been here 3 years in a row now. Yeah. Like, there's something to be said for the caliber of that program. This was the preseason number three team in the country. It's an elite offense, basically top 10 in the country in terms of runs per game. Entering the postseason, entering the super regionals last weekend. But yeah, pitching is certainly a concern for Stanford, and specifically their strike throwing. And outside of their ace, Quinn Matthews, like, who steps up for Stanford and pitches well? That's going to be the biggest thing, I think, that determines what Stanford does here, because they talked about it. We talked with players from all eight teams yesterday for over the course of 8 hours. And that's what Stanford said. Like, we've been here the last 2 years. Yeah. But we're 1-4 here. And like, we don't want to just be happy to be here, which is maybe the mindset they took on. They said their last couple years here.
Your comment about their bats, does that, I take it you're not surprised that Rhett Lauder is going tomorrow for Wake Forest. They don't save him for Monday.
Yeah. No sense saving him. Right. And like, the rest of the pitching staff, like, you got to trust them enough, and you're going to have to get through LSU and Tennessee as well. Like, that is a loaded side of the bracket that Wake Forest is on. So, and then the other part of it is, like, the earlier you pitch Rhett Lauder, in theory, the earlier you can bring him back. And perhaps, you know, depending on how far Wake goes, and they certainly hope it's all the way, the more times you can throw him too. So, you go with what got you here, I think. And certainly when you're facing an offense of Stanford's caliber, like, they got some big leaguers in that lineup. They got legitimate star power. Like, Tommy Troy is a beast, and Braden Montgomery is only a sophomore, but he is oozing with talent, and he looked really good in the super regional. And then in the five spot, they've got the Pac-12 player of the year, who's hitting fifth in Alberto Rios. So the lineup, as it always is for Stanford, is legit.
Mike Monaco's with us here, part of ESPN's team broadcasting the College World Series. He'll be on the call in just a little bit for the nightcap, Virginia facing Florida. Within that sport, what are people saying about Wake Forest? Because I'm not nearly as plugged in as you are, Mike. And the text I get from my baseball friends, this might be one of the best college baseball teams that we've seen in recent memory.
Yeah, I don't think that's a stretch to say, Josh. I mean, like, last year, people were saying that about Tennessee, really the entire season, even though they ended up not reaching Omaha. They got as close as you can get without making it to the Men's College World Series. And so with that as the comparison, like, Wake is as dominant and as loaded as Tennessee was last year. And I think there is a curiosity from the people who cover this sport nationally and who have been doing it a lot longer than I have, to really see them in person and see what it looks like and see what it's all been about. Like, Kyle Peterson, who's, you know, our lead analyst and who's been doing this forever at the highest level, born and raised in Omaha, like, he oozes this place. He wanted to go to Winston-Salem May 5th to do Wake Forest Boston College because he wanted to see them in person because he knew they were going to be here. And he said then, and he believes it now, like, they are the most complete team in the country. And they have been all season long. So I think there's a curiosity to see what it looks like and also to see what it looks like against a field this loaded, because I'm not just hyping it up from trying to drum up some ratings here. Like, you could not concoct a better field here. Like, you have really, like, you know, what, five of the top eight national seeds who are here. You have a two seed in TCU who went four straight years from 2014 to 17. And they're the hottest team in the country right now. They're absolutely rolling. You've got a Tennessee team that was the preseason number two in the country. And then you got Cinderella as well in Oral Roberts. And this is not some, oh, you know, they just snuck in by the skin of their teeth and, oh, they kind of got hot and they're riding some good mojo. They do have a lot of that. But this is a 51-win team, so you have it all. So I say all that to say I'm excited to see what Wake looks like against a field that is this powerful.
Oh, yeah, and Oral Roberts blew an 8-0 lead in game one on the road at Oregon and still won the next two. Yeah, they certainly earned their way here. Mike Monaco is with us here. In the spirit of concocting a field, though, we've had some fun today. We do not have ESPN's ACC-SEC Challenge matchups for next year yet. So we started putting them together for in-state teams here. You just let me know, Mike Monaco, which of these games you'd most like to be on the call for, your level of intrigue, if it were to be put together this way. Duke, Kentucky, and Cameron. Kentucky's never been to Cameron, or excuse me, they haven't been since 1958. John Calipari has never been to Cameron. North Carolina potentially getting Tennessee, sending Rick Barnes back to Chapel Hill. Shades of him yelling at Dean Smith and nearly starting a brawl back in the 90s. How about sending Steve Forbes back to his roots, either Texas A&M where he once coached or to the state of Tennessee against Vanderbilt, get the private schools together. And, you know, how about regionality, NC State, South Carolina? Yeah, sign us up. Send them to Columbia the same way that the NCAA baseball committee sent NC State down to Columbia. It seems like there's an obvious answer out of these four, but I'll still ask you anyway.
Yeah, I think I'm taking the obvious there with the first one. You said Duke, Kentucky, and that's nothing against any of the other ACC teams in there, or certainly the SEC teams too, but I am so curious and excited to see what John Shire's team looks like and what they bring back in particular, but paired with what they add to. I don't think I'm alone in that. And my mind is certainly nowhere near basketball mode on June 16th, but even that gets me excited.
Yeah, that's the goal, just to tickle you a little bit, get you excited. Yep. And speaking of it being June 16th, you referenced that one of your teammates is Ben McDonald. I got my O's cap on here. You follow AL East baseball a little bit, you know. My O's currently have the second best record in baseball. Just tell me, like, I'm asking you as a friend, like, I'm not used to having a good baseball team. I'm not used to it, Mike. What should my level of excitement be? How much should I give off without looking like a clown, without looking like I haven't been here before?
No, you have my full permission to lean into the excitement as much as you want to and to drink it all in. Because that's fun and that's what sports should be about. Like, it is way more fun to live life as an optimist than it is as a pessimist. But also, like, again, how can you not get excited about the talent they have? And from Adley to, like, Gunnar Henderson, I was so impressed watching him at the end of last year doing Red Sox games. And I know it hasn't necessarily been, the start that he envisions or what he's going to turn into, but Grayson Rodriguez too, like the excitement of that guy coming into this season. So you have my full permission to get as fired up as you want. And look, like, again, it's June 16th. Like, we've had a lot of the season. So, not that things can't change down the stretch. And certainly we know how good the AL East is. But man, the Orioles, you know what? They've been fun for a couple years now too. Like, they have had their moments and this has been percolating and you've known it's been coming. And I'm really happy for Orioles fans and, Ben McDonald and Kevin Brown's a friend of mine. Like, yeah. I'm really excited for them too, to be able to broadcast a team as exciting as the Orioles are.
Will Dalton, you hear that? He's a Yankee fan. I have Mike Monaco's full endorsement to be obnoxious. You hear that?
I mean, you've already been kind of obnoxious already, so it's only going to get worse now.
Yeah,
thanks, Mike.
So I just got his full endorsement. Just got to make sure.
I love it, Will.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Mike Monaco, you have some fun over there. Jello shots for everybody out in Omaha, and have a great call for a game in just about like an hour and 15 minutes. Thanks for spending the time.
You know what, Josh? You're always welcome. It's a pleasure chatting with you anytime. If I see Steve Forbes at Rocco's and we do a shot together, we will hopefully tweet out the picture.
Let's go. You're a Notre Dame guy. Channel your inner Mike Bray. That's what I'm encouraging you to do.
I did my share last year. I'll put it that way.
The news of the world's greatest entertainer, the hardest working man in show business. Ladies and gentlemen, the star of the show.
Now back to The Drive with Josh Graham.
There's a reason WD, I suspect, is playing this song. It might have something to do with the tradition that has become popular in Omaha, where the College World Series is taking place. Wake Forest, their first trip to Omaha in 68 years. You're going to want to hear what Steve Forbes had to say about the Bobby Klempman situation in just a little bit. We'll play that sound for you in about 15 minutes from now. But let's touch base on football for a few minutes. As of a couple of days ago, the Carolina Panthers were off on summer break, so to speak. They're off for 6 weeks until it's training camp time in Spartanburg. But that doesn't mean it's time to sit back and relax just yet. There are things that need to happen between now and then, and I have a list of what should be the Panthers' three top priorities over the next 6 weeks. Number one being, yes, the quarterback, Bryce Young getting ready physically and mentally. The mental piece, not all that concerned about it. Bryce seems to be making great progress. He seems to be right on track. But if the expectation is for him to start right away, and that is the expectation many have, he still has a lot of work to do to be ready to go as the day one starter. not just for the regular season, but probably in training camp as well. The piece I'm more concerned about is the physical side of things. Before the draft, Scott Fitterer said, if we were to draft, hypothetically, Bryce Young, there are some things we can do with Bryce's frame. Now, you can't really improve his height, but he cited some things they did with Russell Wilson physically to make him a little bit thicker. That's something that is worth keeping an eye on with Bryce because he still looked a little small, maybe a lot of small, when we saw him out on the field for OTAs and in the mini camps. Here was Bryce when asked about whether or not he planned to pick up some weight this offseason.
You know, for me, I trust the strength and conditioning staff here. We have an amazing strength staff who, works very, very, you know, I've had the pleasure to work with and will continue working with throughout the offseason. They do a great job here.
My wife was sitting next to me listening to Bryce Young speak last night, and it got to the point where we were both predicting what his answer was going to be to every question. And usually we were batting about 700. We got it on the nose a number of times. Hey, what specific teammate has stood out? Sarah Bradford goes, well, I can't just single out one person. And that's exactly what.
That's impressive.
Yeah, he's useless when it comes to the words that come out of his mouth, but he's doing it on purpose. That's next level smart. To be purposefully dull and purposefully boring and not want to give us anything. He does not utter an interesting syllable. I'm sorry for wasting your time and playing that sound. So the top priority with Bryce is getting him ready physically. The second priority for the Carolina Panthers, pass rushers. First off, get the Brian Burns deal done. He wants to be a Panther. He said so this week. He's the best player on your roster right now. He plays a premium position. You turn down 2 first-round picks to keep him around. You got the cap space. DJ Moore, Christian McCaffrey have been traded away. You got a quarterback on a rookie deal. There is no excuse for you to have this drag out until the start of training camp. Get it figured out. Extend Brian Burns long term. The other pass rushing piece is probably the biggest hole on this roster, offense or defense. Who is the second edge rusher? I get former Tar Heel Marquise Haynes has had a pretty good offseason. Looks pretty good in shorts. And without the pads on. Oh, he got some, air quote, sacks out at these OTA practices. But if that is your starting edge across from Brian Burns, it's easy to want a little bit more from that spot. Danielle Hunter's out there. The Vikings, they're trimming things down. They are scaling back, releasing Dalvin Cook, trading away Za'Darius Smith, not wanting to extend Kirk Cousins, whose contract is up after this year. They're telling you they're going into the tank right now and they're looking ahead to the future. So you could potentially get a guy like Danielle Hunter who didn't show up to minicamp this week. That is the Scott Fitterer deal to be in on. Last priority, having a healthier, deeper cornerback room. Get J.C. Horn back after the ankle foot deal that he's been dealing with.
Send me that cash out, family.
Get him back. Doesn't need surgery. Got to wear a cast for a few weeks. They said he'd be back by training camp. Let's hope that's the case. Dante Jackson, late last year, sustained an Achilles injury. Here he was on his rehab.
Feeling great. About 7 months and some change out. Be 8 months next week. But I'm feeling great. Was back running at like 5.5, 6 months. Feeling strong. Just using all this time that I have up until training camp to just keep getting more and more ready, diving in the system and diving in, you know, just my rehab.
So get those guys back. Dante and JC, get them both healthy. But with both of them being out, it kind of revealed that you're a little thin in an important position on that back end. You can add another body and not the tryout guy who was added to the 93-man roster yesterday. That's not what I'm talking about. Marcus Peters is in free agency, still waiting around. There's some guys on the scrap heap here. Maybe Eli Apple. Not to be your number one or number two corner, but maybe a second tour of duty in Charlotte to be a rotational corner that you can bring in. just feels like that's something they need to do. So the three priorities, getting Bryce Young ready physically and mentally, pass rusher number two, signing Brian Burns and adding a legit secondary rusher, and number three, having a healthier, deeper cornerback room. Those are the things Carolina needs to focus on. Getting back to why you were playing LMFAO, whatever happened to those guys, by the way? Shot's the name of the song. Are you familiar with the Jell-O shot challenge that they have out at a bar named Rocco's in Omaha?
I saw people posting about this, but I'm not sure. I didn't know this was a tradition, though.
So every year in recent years, and they've posted it on social media, they sell Jell-O shots, and they ask you which team you root for, and then they put on the board all eight of the schools that are in the College World Series, and they count it up cumulatively throughout the World Series to see which fan base drinks the most Jell-O shots. Wake Forest started off pretty slow. They only had like 43, but then they bounced back a day later with 328.
Ooh.
Second place to LSU right now. The Deeks are coming.
Let's hope.
And all the Deek fans are telling me, wait, Josh, we don't play till Saturday. We showed up a little bit late in the game, and plus, we got to pace ourselves. We're going to be here for multiple weeks.
Marathon.
That's right. So the Deeks are in good shape with the Jell-O shot challenge. I've never been a big Jell-O shot guy. Usually, when Steve Forbes has a press conference, it's fun and entertaining. Today, not so much. We'll dive into that and give away Dash tickets next on The Drive.
You ready to play ball?
All right, let's play ball.
Hit, run, and score with Dash Day.
I believe in the church of baseball.
The first caller to 336-777-1600 gets a free pair of tickets.
Amen.
Amen, brother.
Now back to The Drive with Josh Graham.
My disgust is not with agents. My disgust is with one person who treated me and my staff and Wake Forest with zero respect.
Whew. I don't want to be on Steve Forbes' bad side, but there is an agent that did end up on Steve Forbes' bad side by the name of Michael Tellum. By the way, first to call in right now at 336-777-1600. Gets a pair of tickets to see the Dash on Sunday afternoon. 336-777-1600 is that phone number. Steve Forbes, he fired shots pretty directly there at Bobby Klintman's agent. It was a 20-minute statement, essentially, what he read, outlining why Bobby Klintman is no longer at Wake Forest and why Bobby earlier this week withdrew his name from the NBA draft past the deadline where you could return back to college. So now he is committed to playing in Australia's professional basketball league. He explained that. The accusation essentially boils down to this. Steve Forbes says that this NIL agent who Bobby Klintman hired in January, Michael Tellum, again is his name, had no interest in helping Bobby with NIL. His intent was to get Bobby out of college basketball because that's where this agent could eventually start making money off of Bobby, and wanted them to be playing pro basketball. Selling him on the dream of making it to the NBA, but if the NBA wasn't going to be it, he sure as heck wasn't going to encourage Bobby to return to Wake Forest or to any other college, instead valuing him going to play back overseas, and in this case, play in Australia. Forbes brought up this example to prove that this agent, this is Forbes' side, had no interest in Bobby's education or keeping him in college basketball.
His agent finished our conversation by telling me European players were not interested in school. Throughout my career, I've coached players from all over Europe, and this is just not the case. In fact, Matthew Marsh was all academic, all ACC this past year. Incoming freshman Marcus Marion is an honor student. Antonis Kavalauskas is a graduate of A&M and a 15-year professional on my staff, on and on and on. It was obvious to me that Bobby's agent was telling him that school was not important, and again, proving that this agent was not working with us, he was working against us.
He does have a few NBA clients, such as Danilo Gallinari, this Michael Tellem. Usman Jang is another. Dorian Finney-Smith, who I believe is now on the Nets, used to play for the Dallas Mavericks. Those are some of Michael Tellem's clients in addition to Bobby Klintman. But one point that Steve wanted to make crystal clear, Bobby never soured on Wake, and he never really had issues with Bobby Steve, and still doesn't. In fact, when I talked to Bobby back in Greensboro when Wake season ended, he was telling me how excited he was to come back and play and to have a John Collins-like second year and end up being a top 20 draft pick. And I believe that would have been possible for him. And according to Steve Forbes, Bobby was texting him about adding Hunter Salas and adding some of these other guys in the transfer portal, Efton Reed. This might be a very long clip that we have here, but I want to give it to you because I think it's really interesting. Steve Forbes' descriptive breakdown of his last sit-down with Bobby Klintman and then what happened when Bobby went with his agent out west to work out in L.A. getting ready for the draft.
The day Bobby left for L.A., he met with me in my office, and he told me that he wanted to experience the NBA draft process but planned on returning to Wake Forest if he was not guaranteed a first-round pick. He was excited about our team and his progress he had made during spring workouts. I told Bobby to continue to build upon his upward trajectory that he had experienced the past 5 weeks, and I wished him all the best. I told him we'd come out and see him in L.A. after he got settled and watch him work out. He was very excited to hear this, and he told me he couldn't wait to see me and our staff in L.A. The first week of May, I asked Coach Shea to fly to L.A. on May 4, 5, and 6 to support Bobby and watch his workouts. I went to Johnson City, Tennessee, to see my daughter receive her doctorate. Coach Shea called his agent and set up the visit. His agent was entirely deceitful during the entire time Coach Shea was in L.A. and did everything he could do to not allow Coach Shea to visit with Bobby, which was ridiculous because Coach Shea was only there to watch him work out and support him. Heck, we sent Bobby shoes for his workouts when he got to L.A. because he was told he was not furnished with any. Bobby was supposed to have dinner with Coach Shea on the 5th. Instead, his agent had Bobby come to his house for dinner. Bobby told Coach Shea he could not come to dinner and had to go to his agent's house to meet some important people. Coach Shea was not invited. The next morning, the last day Coach Shea was in L.A., he asked for a meeting with Bobby and his agent before he flew home. They met at a Starbucks where his agent and another agent who works with Bobby's agent told Coach Shea that Bobby was not going to return to Wake Forest if he didn't get drafted in the first round. Instead, he was going to play in Australia.
That's pretty damning if true, that they didn't let Jason Shea meet with Bobby Klintman and that he learned at a Starbucks 10 days after Bobby told Steve Forbes that he was excited to come back to Wake if he wasn't going to be a first-round pick, that he's now not going to return to Wake. It's either going to be going to the draft or going to Australia. That is tough, and my reaction the same as it was when I learned about this headline on Monday of this week, that Bobby was pulling his name out of the draft to, you know, pursue a pro career in Australia. I feel badly for Bobby because it's clear this agent didn't have his best interest in mind. And this is what I mean specifically by that. You get more exposure playing in the ACC in front of scouts and plenty of opportunity to impress people a lot more than you do 15 hours away on a plane in Australia. And that's what's been robbed from Bobby by this agent. Especially now they can't put the wool on in front of their eyes and say, hey, you can't get paid in college basketball. That's no longer the case. You can in college hoops. So I have no reason to believe that what Steve Forbes outlined in a really detailed way isn't legitimate. Let's cheer up the mood for a second, though. It's Friday. Out in Omaha, Nebraska, they have a place called Rocco's where they are giving out Jell-O shots by the dozens, by the hundreds, and they're charting how many Jell-O shots are bought by specific fan bases and adding it up. The Deeks were in a bad spot after the first day, but the Deeks, they don't play until tomorrow, so they were behind the eight ball, and now they're second among the eight teams, and somebody who apparently has been doing a lot of damage in the way of buying these Jell-O shots
has called in from Omaha, Nebraska. Jay Austin is joining us from Omaha. Okay, paint the picture for us who have never been to Omaha and never been to Rocco's. What's the scene like, Jay Austin, when you're in there?
Afternoon, Josh Graham. Thanks for having me on. The scene out here is it's outstanding. This town embraces this tournament, and they embrace each of these restaurants. It kind of reminded me of like a Pinehurst, hosting the U.S. Open, or like any of the, like Greensboro hosting the Wyndham. Yeah. You know, they just really wrap their arms around the event. And Rocco's is a corner restaurant, pizzeria type place, and we pretty much closed them down last night. staying till the end, but what they do is they have that board that I've sent you a picture of, and they track it, and then the $5, half of it goes to charity.
Right.
If I'm remembering correct.
Yeah, I do see there's a charity piece to this, where a big portion of it, and it wouldn't surprise me if it was half, goes to charity. So how many people are in this place? Like, are we talking hundreds? Like, how many people are with you as this place is, like, stacking up Jell-O shots late at night?
I would say 50 to 100 people were there last night as teams were starting to come in.
The Deeks well represented, though? The Deeks well represented?
The Deeks are well represented, if not maybe in numbers, then in by our fandom.
That's well put.
Because as far as teams, LSU's probably got the biggest arriving base already. I haven't seen but maybe a few people, supporting Virginia. And I'm just going based off like a straw poll of shirts and hats, right?
Yeah, I got you.
But Virginia, Tennessee, I think those teams are going to be probably more in today because that game's tonight. And TCU and Oral Roberts, we ended up staying at the Hyatt last night, which is the official team hotel for Oral Roberts. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah,
still?
I can hear you just fine. Okay. I just got to know this, Jay Austin. Yeah. How many are you committing to put down tonight? How many?
Well, like a starting pitcher, I might need a couple days before my next start. we put down quite a few, and I might have met my quota.
I want a number. I want a number. Last night, how many?
I believe it was at least 20 to 25. On a personal level. And then, of course, of our group, I would say just about the same.
Excellent. Put in the work, Jay Austin. Keep us posted, and then we will post what you're doing on our social media at Josh Graham Radio. Keep us posted, okay?
I will. Go Deeks.